I'm Eddie Merckx. You listen to The Bicycle Show on Resonance 104.4 FM.
Well, that's right, Eddie. This is The Bike Show on Resonance FM. And continuing on from the continental theme of last week's show, which was live in Berlin, we are in the city of Brussels. And for those of you keeping an eye on my carbon emissions, I should say that I came here on the night train from Berlin. And joining me also on the Eurostop is William Creswell. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jack. It's good to be back on the show. It's been a long time.
A few months ago, maybe even more than a year ago on the bike show, I reported on a new scheme, the kind of 21st century reinterpretation of the white bicycle that was being run in the French city of Lyon by a company called JC Dassault, a company mainly known for its advertising hoardings. But this is these are bicycles which are available at multiple points around the city that you can just check out for, by the hour. They're completely unmanned, self-repairing, self-maintaining bicycles, fully equipped. And we've got ourselves a pair. It was too difficult to resist the lure of a new bicycling gadget.
That's right. But the one thing they're not is self-propelling. Because they are particularly heavy machines which require a considerable amount of energy to push along. But no, they're great. They're very solid and we're having fun tootling around the city.
And it's a reasonable, it works out about €1 per hour, which if you just take it out for a day and check it in before you go to bed is not too expensive. They've got, as I said, they've got the dynamos front and back. They've got an additional brake light that when you put the brakes on, the light comes on. There's a kind of sort of dashboard on the handlebars, which is very futuristic, it giving you instructions on how to do the lock. There's a basket that's got a kind of integral lock in it. What else? A bell. Yeah, rather poorly adjusted bell. I have to say that the one thing that's of some concern about this bicycle, and I guess it comes from the fact that it's got to be maintenance-free or minimal maintenance, is the fact that it has solid tyres. This is not something that I knew when I checked it out and handed over my credit card, but we soon discovered it from the ride.
Yeah, we crossed some typical Belgian pavé at one point, and those cobbles really went straight through and straight up your spine. It really wasn't very comfortable at all.
I mean, and when you get a slight incline to go up, and you just feel like, half of the energy that you're putting in to the bicycle is just getting somehow dissipated.
I know, it's really hard work. It's incredibly labour intensive. It's a bit like being on an exercise bike. There appears to be an awful lot of resistance around, even at the lowest gear. But it gets us there. It's getting us around. It's nice not to be having to tromp around on our feet.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's get back on the bikes and continue our ride. Much easier going downhill when you've got solid tyres than going uphill, isn't it?
There's an awful lot of momentum as well with the weight of these things.
Well, there don't seem to be a whole lot of people cycling around Brussels. It's strange because Belgium is a country is known for its cycling culture and its bicycle racing. I think we're going to go left here. Obviously producing Eddie Merckx, another great cyclist champions, and there's a big scene out in the countryside of road racing, but it doesn't seem to be something that people do too much to get around in the city.
No, it doesn't look like it, but the roads are kind of, it's quite easy to get lost in the city.
Well, that's because we're not from here.
Only kidding. The roads aren't that conducive to it, and the drivers seem quite unsympathetic. be around quite fast.
But the road markings are decent. There's a lot of roads which are one way for motor cars, but bicycles are allowed to go both ways.
Yeah, you don't see that in London, for example. It is a good thing. I think that's a pretty sensible thing, to be honest, if it's consistent, which it appears to be. So it certainly helps you getting around.
Right, we are on the Place du Luxembourg here, which is in the kind of heart of the EU quarter, the Leopold quarter, and that great glass and steel edifice up in front of us, kind of obscured by some construction work, is the European Parliament. So there it is, the heart of the European project. This is where we send our elected representatives when they come to feed on the gravy train. But you can't really see it very well, can you?
No, it's a little bit disappointing, but you can kind of see inside the kind of modern architecture inside. For some reason, I was expecting some big Grand Place with however many flags it would be now for the countries.
We're going to get run down by a bus, so let's hop onto the pavement here. There are also trams in this city in quite large quantities, and that poses another hazard for the inattentive cyclist who might get their wheels trapped in the tram tracks. That's never happened to me, but I don't know, it seems quite a scary proposition.
Yeah, you can see how easy it would be just to get pushed into them, and then it would be pretty frightening trying to get out, particularly if you've got cobbles on either side as well. Yeah, there's a few hazards around, but no, it's pretty good really in terms of conduciveness to the cyclist.
Well, let's continue on. It being Saturday night, the EU quarter is absolutely deserted. It's like going around the City of London on a Sunday. Everybody's at home and done their week's work. I think we can head for that cycle track over there. It's up on the pavement. Right, green. Go. Oh la la. Attention. Oh, we can get a better view of the Parliament from up here, actually. They really went for us there, didn't they? There was no giving way at all. So there we go, it's the sort of sideways view of the Parliament, which is really all glass and steel, stairways, elevators.
It's pretty imposing, isn't it, actually? And much more modern than I was expecting. I was thought it was this built in the 19...
It's being built now, really. I mean, a lot of it was built in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
For some reason, there's a taste amongst the European institutions for really grand, modernist architectural statements, which I don't actually think does them any favours in terms of the people who are a bit worried about European institutions taking control of people's lives all around Europe. It doesn't really, you know, help them make their case that actually it's all about cooperation and solidarity and togetherness.
Yeah, it doesn't look like an open or welcoming building. It looks like something which is kind of generating almost, you know, it's almost too imposing and powerful on you as you pass by. It doesn't feel very welcoming and warm. It's a shame, really.
Yeah, inside it's very airy, full of kind of atriums and places to have coffee. And when I was there once, I was just amazed that when you get served a coffee, there is an enormous dustbin full of Ferrero Rocher chocolates, which I just thought, this is too ironic. That here I am in the European Parliament having a coffee, being given a handful of Ferrero Rocher. The ambassador was delighted, I can tell you. But we've come up Rue de la Loi, and we are facing the Berlaymont building, which is the home of the European Commission. And those are the people who essentially draft all the rules and laws that are going to apply to the European Union, sometimes loathed, sometimes loved, although probably less frequently loved. But it's quite an impressive building. I think they discovered that it was full of asbestos a few years ago, and so they had to spend 10 years kind of stripping it down. But it's now been clad in a kind of in a framework which allows it to regulate its temperature quite effectively. But again, it's another monumental architectural statement, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. But I prefer this to the one we just saw. I think that, this is the image that I think people are most familiar with when they see, you know, a news reporter reporting on the latest bit of EU legislation or debate, to see this building. And I quite like the look of this kind of framing that they've got outside of it, and particularly when you hear, I assume that's what it is to do with these kind of sustainable heating and ventilation of buildings. I think that's a good thing, definitely. Yeah,
I don't mind this one. And opposite we have the Residence Palace, which is, well, it's a pre-war building. I think it must be around about turn of the 1920s, I suppose. And this was actually the building that housed the headquarters of the Gestapo during the occupation in the Second World War.
How pleasing. I mean, it's not quite up there with the Stasi buildings of East Germany, but it's not far off.
I mean, I don't think it was built for the purpose, but that's the one that they chose.
But it's in character, I think. That may be why they chose it.
And then up here on the right, we have the Consilium, the Council building, which is where a lot of the EU summits, where all the member state heads of state like Tony Blair and Angela Merkel and Jacques Chirac come to thump the table, mm-hmm. and stay up all night wrangling about fish quotas. That's where it happens. And then up in the distance, there looks like there's some kind of triumphal arch. I'm not quite sure what that one's for. We've got a map in front of us, but it's off the map. Anyway, you can hear a great big road. Yeah, this is a kind of 5-lane motorway that goes right through the city centre, and goes kind of dips down into tunnels and then comes out. And it's actually these cars on this big ring road, which creates the speed, I think, that is quite unsettling if you're a cyclist. Whoa, look at that. It's a quad bike doing a wheelie. Well, a sideways wheelie.
That is incredible. I mean, he's still doing it, isn't he?
Yeah, he's doing it all the way down the road. It's two people on a quad bike, just on the two right-hand side wheels, kind of James Bond style.
A brilliant stunt.
Perfectly timed for radio broadcast. Excellent. Thank you, sir. Well, it's quite appropriate that we're standing outside the European Commission headquarters here in Brussels, because just yesterday I received an email from the CTC, the Cyclist Touring Club, the main cyclist advocacy and campaigning group in the UK, alerting me to the fact that there was a law in formulation in Brussels that would require all motor vehicles to keep their headlights on all day. So even when it's in the daytime, they'd have to keep their lights on. This is something that the Cyclist Touring Club is opposing because they think it would constitute a hazard to cyclists. What do you think of a plan like this?
Well, I'm not sure if I fully understand the CTC's concerns, and I can't quite understand the rationale for the legislation, to be honest. I'm not quite sure what it achieves. Surely there's some sort of implication in terms of fuel consumption for a car, and therefore not really contributing to environmental
concerns. This is one of the things that the CTC has raised, that it would increase carbon emissions. But the main argument for a law like this is that there's a time kind of dawn and dusk every day when car drivers probably ought to have their lights on, and they haven't turned them on. They just think it's light enough for them to be seen, but actually they made a wrong call. And there's some evidence that suggests that if you had to have it on all the time, then you wouldn't have that problem of some drivers not having it on when it's dusk and it's getting a bit gloomy out there.
I don't know, I just think that why do we have to legislate to make people change their behaviour that way? Surely one can do awareness campaigns, education campaigns, or a little bit of road signage just to kind of remind people to turn lights on at the right time. But I don't know, it seems like overkill to me.
To be fair to the CTC, I don't think the carbon emissions is their main objection. I think their main objection was a feeling that if car drivers get used to spotting other cars and other road users just by the fact that they've got a great big headlight on the front, they'll not see cyclists as readily, because the cyclists obviously don't have so much light on the front.
Perhaps. I mean, you don't know though, do you really? I mean, you know, cyclists in towns should be aware that they need to make themselves visible, and all, you know, anyway. So whether this would make any difference to the risks that a cyclist takes in terms of their visibility, I'm not sure if that's really the case.
Well, I'm not sure if this is one that's going to really capture the public imagination. It's not like the legislation for the straight cucumbers or the requirement that fruit and vegetable be sold by kilo rather than by pound. Anyway, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to end up on the front page of the Sun or the Mirror.
Well, we've left the EU quarter behind us, and we've just passed the much more attractive Belgian National Parliament, which, I don't know, it's what a real parliament should look like, isn't it? You reckon?
Yeah, and looks like what you might more expect.
And now we're cycling through quite an attractive park that has quite a few strange looking characters wandering about. We've just descended down from the park on a slightly hair-raising descent there. I know these solid tyres, as well as being really heavy, I don't think they have very good handling. I think they don't grip the road, especially in this little bit of moisture that we have now. I was feeling a little bit at risk of une chute.
Yeah, the cornering as you're coming downhill doesn't fill you with the biggest amount of confidence, I have to tell you.
But like moths, we are being drawn towards the light that's emanating from the Grand Place, which is the kind of central hub, really, of the medieval old town of Brussels. It has a huge spire from one of the buildings there. I don't think they're religious buildings. I think they're kind of guild halls dating from I suppose, the 17th century. And there's a light show, kind of Jean-Michel Jarre style lights being beamed up into the clouds. And I don't know, I guess there's some kind of Saturday night festival going on. Oh, look, we've just been passed by Brompton. Fantastic.
That's the second Brompton we've seen today.
So what, should we go and, down and take a look before it really starts raining and before we have to get our horse meat hustle on?
Let's get down there.
This is the bike show on Resonance 104.4 FM. We are in the Belgian capital of Brussels, me and William Greswell, and we have walked into a veritable medieval Yuletide Christmas wonderland here in the Grand Place.
Yeah, we really have. There's the most beautiful Christmas tree in the centre of the square, lit up, complete with luminous reindeer, and a light show underway. But for me, the pièce de résistance, the real thing for this little celebration is the fully life-size nativity scene behind us.
It's true. It's a genuine stable, because there's no room in any of the hotels in the Grand Place for the baby Jesus to be born. So they built him a stable here, which is, it's absolutely life-size, and it's attracting quite a crowd.
Thatched roof, Tudor wattle and daub walls. It really is fantastic. But what's interesting is they put around this section where the baby Jesus and Mother Mary are, complete with straw bales and everything, they've had to put up a wire fence presumably to keep out anyone who really can't find a room for the night.
We attempted to return our bicycles to a different depot from the one that we picked them up, but that didn't prove to be possible, because the one that we were looking for was hidden by a kind of Christmas fair and an exhibition for the candidacy of the Estonian capital of Tallinn to be European City of Culture. I don't know what they were giving away to encourage people to vote for them, but that's the kind of thing that you come across when you spend a night out in Brussels, that's for sure. So the bicycles are back in, and what's the verdict?
It's good for a convenience for a few hours probably, but I think I'd look elsewhere if I wanted to rent a bike for a few days. Probably go to a bike shop or something which does rental of a more normal bike. The comfort levels are not high, and there's quite a lot of cobbled streets around here.
The cobbled streets were a real punishment just there, going around the Place of Saint Catharina, and it really takes it out of you. You just feel like, can I keep going with this this bone shaker? It really is a bone shaker. I mean, the old bikes before they invented pneumatic tyres were called bone shakers, and this is a kind of 21st century return to the bone shaker.
Yeah, I think you're right. It feels like a retrogressive step.
I saw the Deutsche Bahn free bicycles that they had in Berlin. I didn't actually take one out because I hired a bike from the bike shop. But I don't think that they had solid tyres. And I think they also had the advantage that you could leave them pretty much anywhere. And at the moment you locked them, that was when your hire period stopped. And obviously anyone could just take it if they wanted to once you've locked it up. But that seems a bit more sensible than this system, where you can't find the depots to leave them. They've got solid tyres, and nice try, but they have to work on something a bit more puncture resistant. Or they could just employ a kind of team of mechanics to go around pumping up the tyres now and again. Well, we're sat in a well-known
Brussels institution, a restaurant called Le Pré Salé, which is very, very traditional. Bright lights, white tiles on the walls, some extraordinary silver goat-headed coat hangers on the walls, and a really nice sense of bustle and fun and excitement. Lots of people having a big meal on Saturday night. And that includes us, because we've had an enormous meal. And William, after less than 24 hours in Brussels, has gone native, essentially. So would you like to describe to me the delicacies that you've consumed this evening?
Certainly. Well, I originally asked for frog's legs, for starters, but the chef threw a tantrum and said that he refused to cook them. So instead I opted for eels. Eels in liquor, basically.
They were green sauce.
Eels in green sauce, they were called. But basically, it was parsley sauce. So it's just like having eels in liquor back home. Which is in keeping with the aesthetic of the restaurant, with the tiled wall, the white tiled wall. And then for my main course, I had the steak of a horse, which was delicious.
How did you have it cooked?
À point. So not too bloody, but just right, actually. And it was buttery, I would say. Strong tasting and buttery. Unbelievably tender.
And some good frites on the side.
Very pleased with my first proper portion of Belgian frites, which lived up to every expectation.
And washed down with a bottle of Chateau Lacombe Nouillac, 2003. And now we're contemplating dessert, but I'm not sure if I can handle it, really. I mean, it's just as well we cycled like crazies around before we came along here, because there's no possible way we would have packed away this volume of meat and chips and herrings and steamed eels in parsley sauce if it wasn't for a good bike ride. So another reason to enhance your gastronomic weekend away is to take to the bicycle, because your calorie requirement will go up through the roof, and you better pack away, you know, maybe three or four or five meals a day.
Yeah, and I reckon that last little hill we had to go up, and that last little circuit of St. Catherine Square, I think that makes us fully deserving of the creme brulee, which is going to follow. I'm absolutely convinced of that.
You've been listening to The Bike Show on Resonance 104.4 FM. It's just about the end of the show. So I just have to thank William Greswell for riding with me in Brussels. Next week, The Bike Show will be back at home in London. And if all goes to plan, we'll be doing something of a Christmas special, but with an ethical twist. So until then, ride safely and chapeau.